Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today, my very first guest ever on Talk is Jericho, Steve Austin returns to the show 469 shows later. I guess 468 shows later. If he was on number one, this is show 469. It's been a long time. Anyways, Steve is the one who told me about podcasting, introduced me to my old company, Podcast One, who launched my show. And of course, like I said, Steve was my first ever guest. And he's back on Talk is Jericho. But this time, it's a very specific topic. We're talking about music. I've always had great conversations about music with Steve. He's a huge fan, not just his favorite bands and songs. We're talking about entrance themes, what it was like for Steve working in the Sportatorium in Dallas, where the first entrance themes were used in wrestling history. You hear what inspired Stone Cold's iconic entrance. Steve's also talking about his first concert, some of his favorite concerts that he's seen throughout the years. He's got a great story about what happened to him at a Motley Crue show in the 80s. We're rocking with Stone Cold Steve Austin coming up. Steve Austin, Stone Cold Rock and Roll. Getting ready to rock with Steve. And you can rock with Fozzy as well this summer. The Judas Rising Tour resumes July 12th at Rock USA in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Then we do the Cadott Rock Fest on the 13th. Peoria Riverfront in Peoria, Illinois on the 14th. And then Belvedere, Illinois on the 15th. Then we head across the pond over to Europe July 26th at the Fezzen Festival in Hungary. Then we're doing Prague, Sebron, Germany, Zurich, Switzerland, Pinarello di Servia in Italy, Slovenia, the Wacken Festival, Berlin, Bochum, Aschaffenburg, the Leyendas de Rock Festival in Alicante, Spain, the Alcatraz Festival in Belgium, Bloodstock in England in Derbyshire. Go to FozzyRock.com for all information on how you can do VIP for those European shows and get tickets for those European shows. And after that, we come back to the States, start back up August 24th in Atlanta, Georgia at Smith's Old Bar. That's going to be a very cool, intimate gig. And then we head out with Adelita's Way, Stone Broken, and The Stir starting in Huntsville on the 26th. And off we go. Go to FozzyRock.com for all information, all VIP information, all ticket information. We're going all across America, man. I'm talking about Alabama, Tennessee, Arkansas, Illinois, Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, North Dakota, Missouri, Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, North Carolina, West Virginia, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida. Come check it out at FozzyRock.com. And don't forget your VIP packages, which are always a lot of fun. We play a little rock and roll show just for you. Meet you, greet you, everything between. We also got the Rock Allegiance show in Camden, New Jersey, October 6th. Fozzy Rock in the main stage at that one. That's a huge festival. And then, of course, just announced this week, Fozzy back in Fozstralia. And for the first time ever in New Zealand, Auckland, Melbourne, Sydney, Adelaide, Brisbane from November 7th to November 14th. So go check out FozzyRock.com for all ticket information. And check out Talk is Jericho right now for some Stone Cold Rock and Roll with Steve Austin starting now. All right, I'm here at 316 Gimmick Street, or is it 317 Gimmick Street?
We're 317, next door. You're close.
I'm here with Steve Austin, and we just did a great episode of his podcast. And an idea that I've had for a while, it's been 400 and some episodes as we record this since you were on. You were my first guest ever. You hooked me up with the podcast scene, and I appreciate that. But I always wanted to talk to you about something that we've always... You'll send me a text once in a while, or we've talked for years about music. It seems like you're very interested by music and very into it, and you're always very inquisitive and curious, as your dog Callie is involved over here, wants to play with the ball. But you seem like you're a pretty big music fan without really being known as being a huge music fan.
Dude, I'm crazy about music. Ever since, man, I just started listening to radio. And, you know, my dad was in a country western band, so I was, you know, listening to country music back in. It wasn't that cool. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, left my own devices, just found rock and roll. And then, you know, grew up on a lot of, you know, hip-hop stuff and stuff from Detroit. And, dude, I just remember riding down the road. I mean, music was, if you're on the road in this business, and you know how it is, when you first get in the wrestling business, and I'm out of it, been out of it for a long time, you're traveling down the road with a lot of guys. And so a lot of times you're just shooting the breeze. You're booking the territory. You're drinking. I mean, that's just straight up what was happening. And so you're not listening to music. But when I'm going down the road, man, I'd have Merle Haggard, George Jones, Conway Twitty, George Strait, Keith Whitley. You know, if I was in that country mode, or, you know, I'd have, you know, some Guns N' Roses. Rage Against the Machine was a big part of my, you know, WWF run. Or, you know, some of the old stuff, you know, from the hip-hop days. But, yeah, man, I've always been a music guy, so I don't know that people really know that about me. But, man, if, like right now, in this little garage right here, I got a power rack. Right now, I've just been really into Five Finger Death Punch. Hmm. That latest album they dropped is kind of been my go-to album right now. My Pandora right now is set on Boston. For me, at 53 years of age, I always wondered, Chris, why my parents, you know, still listen to that old music, you know, that they grew up listening to. Why didn't they evolve with the new stuff?
Like Elvis or whatever they're into, yeah.
Yeah, and stuff older than that. And I was like, you know, now I'm kind of that guy. I'm still kind of trapped in really, really 70s, 80s, and 90s, and a little bit, and still the grunge, because I was a big Alice in Chains fan. But long-winded answer, but yeah, I'm music like a motherfucker.
I think that when you're talking about a band like Boston, I just saw them this summer, and the music is timeless because classic rock, because there's not any bands playing that style, that you always see a lot of younger kids there, and obviously these guys are in their 60s and 70s, but it still resonates. It's just good time, summer breeze, beer drinking, rock and roll.
You know, and Brad Delp, man, when he committed suicide, and, you know, he was the voice of Boston.
Yeah.
And, you know, and just like when they replaced Steve Perry from Journey.
Yeah.
They can find ways to do it. The thing about Boston was, as much as I loved them, you know, it was really the first three albums. Mm-hmm. But, man, when I go back on YouTube, there's one album, there's one song where they're playing a set in Giant Stadium. It's kind of sunlit. You know, it's pretty good. But just their live performances, from what I've seen on YouTube, just didn't really capture
you.
They were such a studio band.
Right.
And the greatest sound and stuff, you know, I mean, to this day, dude, like I said, my Pandora radio is on Boston radio. So mm-hmm. It's predominantly Boston songs filtered with stuff, you know, from that same genre.
But
it's timeless.
But that's the thing. You're right. They're not great to watch on stage. And actually, there was a time after a friend of mine, Michael Sweet, he's a singer of Stryper, he was in Boston.
He was awesome.
And he looked cool, and at least he rocked. So when he was in the band, they had a little bit of, you know, rock and roll appeal. But then he left, and they got the guy who's from, like, Home Depot or something like that. And he looks like a guy who's from Home Depot that they've just, like, kind of molded into a rock and roll star, quote unquote.
Hey, dude, you just, Michael Sweet, what was that band called?
Stryper.
Stryper.
Yeah.
God dang, man. A lot of people don't give those guys the credit they deserve. They could rock.
Absolutely, they can rock. And that was always something, because they had the Christian thing,
the
Christian gimmick. It kind of took away from the fact that they're great players and great. Michael Sweet's one of the best singers you'll ever hear in rock and roll. And you saw that when he was with Boston, to hit those big notes, mm-hmm. like the Brad Delp notes. You know, it's not easy to do.
But I was into the, you know, like my wife is really into Rush. Meshuggah back in the day, you know, of course, Metallica, Megadeth. I mean, she's a concert goer, man. She's been to.
Is she a Dream Theater fan too?
Not so much.
She's not super prog. Gotcha.
Tool is probably her favorite band.
Gotcha.
So, man, I was always into the bands that, you know, is like, you know, man, I can't even name them all anymore, Chris, but, you know, Scorpions, Boston, you know, Def Leppard. Man, I was a huge Great White fan.
Really?
Yeah, dude. Just the stuff that was a little on the bluesy side.
Yeah.
But it was a little poppy, or had a good hook.
Mm-hmm.
And all the bands that I named that my wife liked, Metallica, Megadeth. I mean, dude, I dig those like crazy. But my go-to stuff is always something with a hook. Huge Whitesnake fan.
You know what's funny about Great White? The first song I ever played in a band, well, the first was the theme from Peter Gunn, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, and another band called Trouble. But it was Stick It by Great White. And that was like at the time, like Great White was one of the first bands of that time frame, and they kind of disappeared and then came back with like the Rock Me and the more of the bluesy thing, which once again, very much a White Snake type of vibe as well. Did you like the 87 White Snake or Slow and Easy White Snake?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That was good.
Yeah.
That was all. And going back to Jesus Christ, Great White, April Wine comes to mind, a great Canadian band.
Yeah.
Those guys never, I mean, they had a mini run,
mm-hmm.
but I just thought they should have had a better run than they did. But I was into White Snake from the get go.
Mm, really?
Well, yeah, talking about, I was a huge Iron Maiden fan, and I know you've been around those guys a lot of your touring with Fozzy,
mm-hmm.
but I was. As soon as Dickinson came on,
mm-hmm.
I wasn't Wrathchild by, who was the other lead?
Paul Di'Anno.
Yeah. All due respect to him. Dude, when Bruce Dickinson came in, I was on board.
He just did my show this week.
Hey, dude, how are those two guitarists? Adrian Smith and Dave Murray. I get their names mixed up. But
those guys,
the twin guitars,
mm-hmm.
the signature sound, and Steve Harris is probably one of my favorite bass players.
Mm-hmm.
And a dude beating the drums is badass. But I don't know, the twin guitars, the bass guitar, and doesn't Steve Harris write most of their shit?
He does, but Bruce and Adrian Smith write a lot of stuff too together, like the tandem. But to go back in what you're saying, so your dad was in a country rock band?
Country western band? Yeah, he sold insurance for a living. He played in a country western band.
What did he play?
He played lead guitar.
Wow.
He played a lot of old school chords,
mm-hmm.
and he was pretty nimble back in the day. And my dad, you know, he was born in, I think, 37. He's 81. And he grew up in a small town, and, you know, he was kind of the stud athlete in town. And he taught himself how to play guitar. Mm. And he played a Gibson, I think it was a 57 or 58 Gibson Birdland, kind of hollow-bodied.
Yeah, the guitar. Bigger guitar, yeah.
And that's what he played. And he had a custom, you remember the old custom amps
mm-hmm.
with a K? And when I tried to play guitar, you know, I'd plug into that thing. Guitar didn't work for me. I tried to play bass guitar. I went down to the music store in Victoria, Texas. And there's a blind guy that ran the store. I can't remember his name. I don't know how he ran the store being blind, but my dad knew him very well. He goes, "Hell, Steve, if you don't want to try to play this, you know, 6-string guitar, maybe try bass guitar." And I'm figuring, hey, 4 strings, it'll be easier. I'll give it a shot. So I go down there. I get the bass guitar. It was a Sunburst. I can't remember the brand. Pay $275 for it. And I made payments on that thing, Chris. And, dude, when you're, I think I was probably 15, whatever, you buy a $275 guitar, that's a commitment. And I made every single payment on that sumbitch, and I paid it all, but I didn't learn how to play it. And here's the thing, talking about, you know, going back to music, I was a huge Kool and the Gang fan. Mm-hmm. About the time Ladies Night came out, you know how it started? Those two notes was the only thing I could play on a bass guitar. That's it. Couldn't play the rest. It had a funky bass line. And of course, being a huge you know, funkadelic fan, you know, Bootsy Collins,
yeah.
you know, some of those badass bass players, Red Hot Chili Peppers, mm-hmm. more people I like,
Riffly.
With Flea on that damn bass. So. Yeah, man, I have no damn music talent.
Well, here's a funny story that you got 3 WWE world champions who were bass players. You, Hulk Hogan, and Chris Jericho. That's why I started.
Did you play bass?
Yeah, my high school band, I was a bass player.
Dude, I didn't know you played no instrument.
Yeah.
I didn't know you sang.
No, we were called Scimitar, which is like a curved Sinbad sword, you know. And I was a bass player, singer. And all we did was Iron Maiden and Metallica songs, and no one else would sing. So I sang and played bass at the same time. I thought I could play the songs right. I probably played them, you know, 60% right of what Steve Harris was doing, but it sounded close enough. So yeah, I was a bass player too.
That's
there
cool,
you go.
Man. I just hooked up with a guy. I was down there in Reno, and well, here's a story. I was a huge Tesla fan.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys were great.
Yeah, absolute great rock.
And so one of the guys sent me an email that was I think it's from the record label. And Frank Hannon, you mm-hmm. know, one of the guitar
player, yeah.
And so I was trying to get him on the podcast. And, dude, we just lost contact a couple of years later. The guy sends me another email. And I said, okay, we'll just see if we can hook up. He lives in Sacramento. I said, man, I'm not going to be in Sacramento anytime soon, but I'll be in Reno. And he sent me another email. He goes, hey, dude, he was just kind of thinking about it. There's a guy in Reno who has a guitar shop called Bizarre Guitars. He's got a lot of badass, valuable guitars. And he's sold guitars to everybody. And he's also an accomplished guitar player himself. He might have some good stories. You might enjoy talking to him.
Hmm.
So I did, and he's got a band called the Greg Golden Band, and the dude is a damn good guitar player, but he's good friends with Frank Hannon. He produces a lot of their songs. So when Tesla's not on the road, you know, he does some stuff with the Greg Golden Band, and they said, hey, man, we were thinking about cutting a song, and what about you playing a bass? We'll teach you how all you got to do is put in the time. And it's like deja vu all these years later. At 15, I'm trying to play the bass guitar, 275, money wasted on a Sunburst bass guitar. And at 53, I got my chance to be a rock and roll star. All I got to do is go out on a limb and grab it, Chris.
There's a great Spinal Tap song called Big Bottom where they have like everyone in the band plays bass. I can just see now you, me, Hogan, all playing bass on a song. But that's great. So you try the bass and singing, not good at singing?
No, dude, you know I can't sing.
Right. Yeah. There's a great story. You got to tell it again, the famous one about your brother when you were...
Growing up, man, I was a huge Kiss fan. I know you are as well.
Yeah.
Had every single album, loved every single member. I wish Peter and Ace would have stayed as straight as Paul and Gene, you know, and got to get more money.
Right.
But anyway, I had my headphones on, and you know, man, I was in there singing Shock Me, you know, Ace's song, Make Me Feel Better, Shock Me. And all of a sudden, man, I'm singing my ass off, and this was me and my brother sharing a room. And I'm just sitting there, dude, I'm jamming. I'm Ace Frehley. I'm singing like a motherfucker, right? And boy, just my brother just bitch slapped my damn headphones right off my head. And we were 10 months apart in age.
Yeah.
We fought like cats and dogs every single day. I won 99.9% of the time. Boy, he slapped those headphones off my head. You know, I was pretty tough back then, Chris. I jumped off that goddamn chair. I said, boy, what are you doing? He goes, take those headphones off and listen to yourself. You sound like shit. I mean, kind of like, goddamn, that was kind of a rude awakening. Kind of took me out of my zone. And so, sure enough, I took the headphones off and listened to myself saying, Shock Me. I sucked ass. Jeez. And that dude right there, that crushed me. I knew that I wasn't going to front a rock and roll band. And that's probably when I started trying to play the guitar and the bass.
Did you ever see Kiss live at that point in time?
No, I never seen Kiss live. Like I said, we did a previous podcast. We did my show. I've seen Motley Crue a couple of times. I've been to a couple of Ozfests, you know, part of Black Label, seeing Zakk Wylde.
Right.
Used to hang out in the hotel with him before. But no, dude, I never saw Kiss. I was never really the only time, as a matter of fact, the time I tried to go see Kiss, they were playing like wherever it is. I think they were playing the Summit in Houston, Texas. We used to wrestle there before, you know, they got a new building. Joel Osteen now runs out of the Summit. And Kiss was going to be in concert. This is my only chance to go see him. It's 100 miles away. And, dude, my dad was old school. He's from the country, and he played country music. I said, Dad, will you take me and Kevin to go see the Kiss concert? He goes, well, Steve, I'll think about it. Well, my dad says he's going to think about it. 85% of chance, it's probably going to be a no. Anyway, so he wouldn't drive us 100 miles and just hang around for a couple hours. So I have never seen Kiss in concert.
To this day.
I got the Heisman stiff arm on that.
Who was your first concert? Do you remember?
Yeah. It was Axe in Heaven. Yeah, two. I mean, just kind of, this was going back. The Motley Crue album?
Shout of the Devil?
Shout of the Devil. Right. But they actually had an album before that, right?
Too Fast for Love.
Exactly.
Right.
So anyway, this is around that time. And when I saw those guys, I graduated high school in 83. I was still in high school. I was 81, 82, I'm guessing. That's it.
Axe in Heaven.
Here's the thing. Yeah. And they weren't bad. So anyway, we're sitting there. Me and my brother, Axe in Heaven, are playing. Dude, I'm just a kid, right? High school. I think I'm cool, right? And I'm kind of, you know,
hair,
medium shirt on. I'm trying to throw out the jacks, and this dude behind me, you know, he's rocking, and he keeps hitting my back with his shoe, and I'm like, you know, I'm pretty tough, and so like I look around, I said, dude, what the fuck you doing? And he was just pounding the beers, and I'm like, God damn it, I just got to put up with it, right?
Right.
Sure enough. Motley Crue hits the stage. They're about three songs in. This summit's just upchucks all over my back. Dude, it's like someone just poured a 3-gallon bucket of liquid beer. Just vile.
Warm.
Yeah, come out of the dude's gut. All on my back. I said, God damn, what the f*** wrong with you? Got up and ripped off my shirt. All of a sudden, I stand up, take off my shirt. I'm not taking off my shirt to be a badass or to flex. I got beer all over me that had been in this guy's belly. Here's a security guard. What's going on here? So I couldn't get no revenge. Mm-hmm. So I said, nothing, you know, whatever. So then, as cheap as I am today, I went to the gimmick stand and bought me a Motley Crue t-shirt because I had to.
There you go. Put some money in Vince's Nicky's pocket. When you're talking about, and you mentioned, like, I know you kind of started in Dallas at the Sportatorium, right? And wasn't that kind of one of the first territories that used music as ring music for the guys?
From what I understand, it is, because, you know, Michael Hayes, they were saying they were one of the first bands to, you know, use Freebird.
Yeah, Freebird. Wasn't Tom Sawyer, Kerry Von Erich's
theme? Oh, dude, man. Yeah, it was Tom Sawyer.
Modern Day Warrior.
But here's the thing. When they started running that music at the Sportatorium, I was playing football at North Texas State University. You know, pretty jacked up. I was a linebacker, weak side defensive end, long blonde hair. Man, when they hit Stranglehold from Ted Nugent, another guy who was a big fan of back in the day, when Stranglehold came on, mister, I mean, you talk about, and you know, Tom Sawyer or whatever Care was coming out to.
Who was Stranglehold's theme?
Kevin.
Oh.
Yeah. When Strangle could, you know, that classic guitar riff down, at the top, down. That's yeah. Ted. Man, when that shit hit, shit was on. Mm. And Kevin came down there barefooted, and, you know, the Freebirds, goddamn, when the Freebirds came out there, Chris, you can appreciate this. You're a showman. And I don't know, like in today's generation, you know, when the Freebirds went into the Hall of Fame, you know, it was way past due.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael wasn't the greatest technical wrestler in the world, but you talk about a guy who's going to go out there and you believed in him.
Yeah, yeah. He
was a piece
done,
of
right.
trash. You talk about a heel. It would come time to get the heat. He hit that mean streak. Dude, it was worth the price of admission. You know, everybody talks about the Confederate flag, whatever. He had that big-ass red robe with Confederate flag on the back of it, and he got on that damn second turnbuckle and started gyrating his hips and flipping his hair around. His entrance was worth the $10 I paid to get in. And then the match between them and the Freebirds, the match between them and the Von Erichs was damn near a shoot, you know, because they were real snug and
right,
stiff.
Right,
because they had an agreement. And it was really electric. Here's a story. So I'm working at Sportatorium, right? I've just come out of Chris Adams Wrestling School. Been wrestling for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Friday nights we ran a live show, and then Saturday morning was a TV taping that they played that Saturday night live to tape on KTVT. So I've been out of wrestling school for been in the business for 2 months. All the heels coming in from Tennessee. This is when Jarrett bought the territory from Von Erich.
Mm-hmm.
So it's now USWA. And the heels are coming there, PY, Chu High, all those guys, and they're beating the shit out of me with kendo sticks and weightlifting belts because I'm this white meat baby face with pretty good physique, right? So anyway, after 2 months of that, I figure, hell, I got to be ready, right? At the same time, I was still driving a forklift, working on a freight dock. I asked old Jarrett, I said, hey, man, when do you think I can start working full-time? He goes, hell, Steve, I think you're ready now. Hell, I loaded up my Hyundai Excel and headed off to Tennessee. And so anyway, long story short, everybody's heard half my shit to begin with, but I'm living at the Congress Inn. It's a shit box. They let me pay whenever I can because I ain't got no money, but they knew, you know, that I was good for my word, and they really took care of me. And then, you know, as a green baby face going into a regional territory, we're working the same towns every single week, same towns. You know, you get your chops up pretty good
because
you got to change your shit up.
Right.
And I was green as grass and working with some great veterans and riding with some great veterans. Listen to them tell me about psychology. So here I am, green as grass, decent physique. But as I started starving, I started losing weight. I used to do push-ups before the matches to get a little bit of a pump because at least if I was going to stink the joint out in the ring, at least I wouldn't look good when I got there.
Right.
And so I remember, I said, man, I got to have a theme song. And so on a little gimmick recorder, I recorded Unchained. And what I used Jamie's Crying in Dallas, but there I used Unchained. And you know how Unchained starts with that pretty cool Van Halen riff? And Van Halen goes back to one of those lists I was, you know, big into. So I gave it to, what was the guy's name? Buddy Wayne. Or was the son of Buddy Wayne, whatever.
Ken Wayne.
Yeah. I said, man, I said, when I come out, can you play this music for me? And he looked at me like I was the biggest piece of shit that ever been in a damn territory. He goes, don't you know that you got to have some ring time before you walk to the ring with ring music? I mean, he really chewed my ass out. But I was like, man, I'd really appreciate it if you could play this music for me. And, you know, of course he did.
Yeah.
But, dude, when Unchained started with that guitar, dude, I would come out the ring, chest all swole out. You know, pretty good-looking kid back then, right? 24 years of age. But, yeah, that was my interest theme. And I figured, hey, everybody else does it. But, you know, as you know, Chris, this business is survival of the fittest, or it's a dog eat dog world. You better go in and get your bite on.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I was green as grass, but I was already learning the system. If you don't look out for yourself,
right,
ain't nobody gonna look out for you. And that's one of the things I learned.
Well, and it's so interesting when you talk about also how important good ring music is, because it puts you in the mood and the vibe and the mindset of what the character is.
Yeah.
You know, I did a thing in my last book where I went through all of my ring songs that I used, and it was, you know, I used Tease Me, Please Me by the Scorpions, and I used...
Dude, hold on, let me cut you off. I saw your list. You got a great list of songs that you used to come up with, but I said, you got heat on me on the first one, Unskinny Bop. What in the... I don't know what your show's rated. What in the F-U-K were you thinking?
Are you taking your hat off and throwing it against the corner if you were wearing one? Here's what happened. So at the time, my first... as I was driving to wrestling school from Winnipeg to Calgary, I got to Calgary, and Poison Flesh and Blood came out. It was their new record. And I still remember, it was $7.99, and there was no tax at the time, so I actually got a penny back when I gave them $8. And Unskinny Bop was the big hit at the time, and it starts with like kind of, for a young guy, Poison was kind of cool at the time. But the one time I used it, I still don't know how this happened. I remember Strathmore, Alberta, and they put it on and it played backwards. I still don't know why. And I remember I was waiting for my song to play. It was like zip neep, zip neep, zip neep, zip neep. So I had to go to the ring.
You done stunk the joint out before you could stink the joint out.
That's right. But when you're talking about theme songs, and we'll get back into the bands and stuff, but it just kind of hit me. You talk about iconic theme songs. Yours is one of them. Now, Jim Johnson, I think you just had him on your show. He just recently got let go. He also wrote Break the Walls Down for me. What was the process in coming up with your ring music?
Man, I told it a bunch of times, but I'll give it to you. Because, you know, I was coming out with that slow-ass, you know, Ringmaster shit, mm-hmm. that stone, whatever it was bad.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever wrote it was bad. Or, you know, it wasn't bad, it didn't fit.
Yeah, you weren't feeling it.
And so anyway, I come up with Stone Cold thing, and then finally said, you know, it's time to change his ring music up. And so I had a conversation with Jim Johnson, went down there to the studio. And, you know, back in the day, you know, Chris, I was pretty hands-on. You know, you got to be.
Everything, yeah.
And so, man, I walked in there, and I had a CD handed to Jim Johnson, man. I said, man, it's called Bulls on Parade by Rage Against the Machine. And I played it, you know, you know, and it starts off. Sorry about the sound effects that come out of my mouth, but that's stereo. He got it. And so I don't think Magic Music sounds anything like it, but it was inspired by that. And, man, I tell you what, the way he come up with that glass breaking, I don't know how he come up with that idea. When he looped in that siren, I don't know how or why he put that in. A stroke of genius or luck or whatever it was that happened, magic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes things just happen like they do. And I pitched him that song. We listened to it together, and he came up with that. And I give him all the credit in the world. I inspired it with their song, my idea, but his total creation. A fluke, dude, because you've been around and you've seen the reactions when that glass breaks. Yeah, I had to get over to get those reactions, but it's just the perfect music for the perfect setup, for the perfect pop, for any kind of dire situation or circumstances. God damn, that story. That's right when we need Stone Cold. So music is important.
Very much so.
And I love your song.
Yeah.
Break the Walls Down. And we talked about the whole count on my show, but you had a great song as well.
Well, and there was times when I wanted to change it. One time I got Zach Wilde to do a modern version of it, which Vince hated. And at one point I wanted to use an Avenged Sevenfold song called Nightmare, which was pretty cool, fit in with this End of the World as You Know It gimmick that I was doing. And Vince said, no, your song is evergreen. Like, you're coming out to that song for the rest of your career. And he's right, because actually I came out to Judas in the Tokyo Dome, and that was cool because that's a real cool ring music song too. And it was actually a little bit liberating to come out not to break down the walls, but there's just something, like you said, with the glass breaking, if you smell what the rock is cooking, break the walls down, people know exactly what's going to happen the second before it actually does. And it really gets me into character. You know, I remember one time they had Saliva do a King of My World, it was called. I didn't feel it. I didn't want to use it. I remember I even said that. That kind of hurt their feelings. But this is not Chris Jericho music.
No, it wasn't. But Saliva was on fire there for about a year
or two. They were.
They had a good sound, a good look. And, then they were gone.
Well, and you remember back, I don't know if they ever do that with you, when we do collaborations with different people. Did they ever have somebody do a version of your ring music?
Yeah, man, Disturbed did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Disturbed did. Man, I came out with that for a pretty good while, and some people, that's their favorite version. Some people like the classic version. I can't remember if that's when I went heel or not. I don't really remember. But yeah, there was a couple of different, there might have been about three different versions of it.
Because the Stone Cold Steve Austin character was very popular around that time with a lot of music. I mean, Kerry King used to wear Austin 316 shirts all the time. Were you a Slayer fan? How did you become aware of that?
No, man, I'd heard of Slayer. They were a little fast for me. Mm-hmm. And I like, you know, I like a lot of their stuff, but can I listen to them all day? No.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see a guy like Kerry King, you know, coming from one of the heaviest bands out there, one of the Big Four, and I really dig them. But yeah, it's really cool when you see your T-shirt on a guy who you talk to Kerry a lot, right?
Yeah.
Smart dude.
Very smart.
Yeah. And so
when he's not what you think he's going to be by his persona. He plays a gimmick, right?
Yeah. That dude's smart. So when a guy's in a position that he is and he's rocking your shit, you're over.
When you talked earlier, you mentioned that when you go travel with guys, was there certain guys that you traveled with quite frequently? Like, did you travel with DDP for a while, or Nash?
Oh, man, yeah. Me and Nash were a pretty good traveling team. Me, Billy Gunn, Bart Gunn was a team back in the day. Me, Flying Brian, and Raven.
So what kind of music would you put on? Like for Pillman, what would you listen to music with him?
You know, no, man, but I can't, because we were this comedy trio. Me, him, and Scott Levy were always bullshit.
Yeah,
telling jokes. We're booking the territory. Brian's back there reading his vocabulary books. Me and Raven are trying to pop each other. You know,
that
dude's wonderful.
So funny, yeah.
And so he's a very good friend. So we wouldn't really listen to music, but I always remember... Most times I was in the car. Every now and then I'd let Kevin play some stuff. As I remember it, I was always a radio guy, because most time I drove, there's very few people that I trust have a wheel in their hands. Billy Gunn was one. Kevin was one. I wouldn't let Mick drive. He knows this. I wouldn't let DDP drive. You know, there's a lot of guys. I'm a steering wheel guy, and since I'm driving or whatever, that's my radio.
Right, that's the way it worked. Yeah. So you'd
but most of the time we was booking territory.
Yeah.
But like I said, dude, you know, towards the back end of my career when I was running solo and I could totally be the lone wolf, it was all the things depending on where my head was at. If I was trying to think of a T-shirt idea, man, I'm rocking some heavy metal. I'm looking at billboards, and this is back in the fanny pack days. I always had, along with a lot of stuff in my fanny pack, I had paper and a pen. And as I rode down the road, and this is when I like to travel at night. I don't like to travel at night anymore, but we always did after the show, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
So if I was driving down the road and I was listening to some lyrics of a song, if something grabbed me, I'd write it on paper before I forgot it. Or if I saw a billboard, before I could forget my idea, I would write it down on a piece of paper, because I was every day, 24/7, thinking about the next T-shirt.
Was there any that you can remember of lyrics that you used on a shirt?
No. Yeah. I mean, it's like right now, you know, like I'm rocking that... Five Finger Death Punch in there, war is the answer. And that's just in a workout mood right now. I mean, war is the answer. I'm not talking universally.
No, I got you.
In a war. I'm talking about just right now. I trained heavy deadlift and bent over rows today, and that shit was blaring, and that fired me up. And so it's the perfect workout song, because it fits the frame of mind that Stone Cold Steve Austin was in when he walked to the ring.
Mm-hmm.
So I need that same kind of feeling, or I like to feel music as well as listen to it. If I don't feel music, I don't think it's the right music for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be whether it's you know, heavy metal, country, or for Air Supply song, right? You know what I mean?
I agree. Good music is good music. It does. I always say, like, you could take a Slayer song and have it sung by a doo-wop band, and it would still be good. A good song and a good melody works whether it's Air Supply or whether it's Metallica.
Right.
You know?
I was watching a show the other day. Well, it was many years ago, but they were like comparing like two great bands. And man, I don't know if it was one of the guys from Metallica or not, but he was, to make a point, he was like Metallica's a great band. Air Supply is a great band. They both sing different kinds of music, but they're both equally good bands. Mm-hmm. It all depends on what you like.
Right, and what mood you're in as well. I was never a Pink Floyd guy as a kid, because once again, it wasn't, you know, maybe you had to be a drug guy or whatever. Now, older, I can really understand what they're doing. And in a certain mood, I'll put on Pink Floyd. If I'm a little mellow, but it's really interesting stuff. But as a young guy, I didn't get it because it wasn't rocking enough.
Dude, you know who that has happened with to me? Because Pink Floyd, still, now I can appreciate some of the, you know, what's the guitar player's name?
David Gilmour.
David Gilmour.
Yeah.
Kind of a guitar guy, kind of guy. Now I can appreciate some of their stuff. A band that I really missed out on, a dude that had an epic voice, was The Who.
Mm.
And I was like, you had, you know, what was The Who?
Roger Daltrey.
Okay, not The Who. It was...
What song they do?
These Eyes.
Oh, Burton Cummings and Guess Who.
The Guess Who. That's
from Winnipeg, Manitoba.
From Winnipeg, yeah.
Yeah.
Man, dude, what a voice in all these years. And I'm in that garage lifting my weights. And all of a sudden, I'm like, dude, what did you miss out on all these years?
Right.
And there's a big crossover there with Bachman Turner Overdrive. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, because Randy Bachman right. was in the... Actually had Bachman on Talk Is Jericho.
Oh, how was he?
Yeah, he was amazing. Like,
articulate guy. Yes. Very smart.
And guys from that era, the 70s, he never drank, he never smoked weed, but that's the stories awesome. That they have... he told a great story about not taking care of business with the other one. You ain't seen nothing yet. It was a throwaway track. They needed another song on the album. The producer said, what's that one? That's just a shitty demo. Don't bother. I like it. Put it on. Can I at least re-record it? No. It's out of tune. The lyrics are made up on the spot, and it's their first number one song.
Wow.
You know, the stories of that.
Yeah.
You know, because music is a lot like wrestling. Once again, you talk about Stone Cold Steve Austin. It was a lot of timing was involved. And timing is so important in rock and roll and music as well.
Man, it is. And I think when you think about like a guy like a superstar Billy Graham, okay, when they made the DVD set on him in WWE, 20 years is too soon or 20 years ahead of his time, whatever the name was.
Whatever it was called.
He was.
Yeah.
I just wonder, you know, a lot of bands, well, first of all, let's just say he had a real successful heel run.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that superstar Billy Graham could have kind of been the first Stone Cold Steve Austin from just kind of like a tweener guy. Because as a heel, he was out there flexing and stuff, dude. At first, you know, when he was working with Dusty and all those matches, he had legit heat. But then he became so cool, it's like hard to hate him because he's so entertaining.
Right.
Now he's tan, he's got these cool tie-dye tights, and he's jacked up.
Yeah.
And he talks really cool. Yeah. So what is there really to hate about this guy? So I think if Vince Sr. would have just transitioned him rather than beating him with Backlund, boy, what a babyface run that guy could have had, but it would have been within that same... You know,
parameters,
and he would have been the first Stone Cold.
Mm-hmm. That's you're right. Yeah, and you're talking about guys that could really like I was thinking, who would be like the superstar Billy Graham of music? And I always go back to David Lee Roth. The guy could talk, he looked great. Was he the greatest singer? No, but he was perfect for the band that he was in. You mentioned you used Unchained. Were you a big Van Halen and Roth fan?
Huge Van Halen fan, and then because you know. Yeah, the OU812 stuff and
the Sammy stuff.
Yeah, I loved a lot of that Sammy stuff.
5150.
Going back to his days with
Montrose.
Montrose. Yeah. I'm a huge Sammy Hagar fan,
mm-hmm.
So I liked a lot of the stuff that Van Hagar made. But yeah, man, I was heavy duty on the Van Halen. When I list off some of my top bands, you know, they're right in there with the Scorpions and the other guys. And dude, I was a big Triumph fan as well, another Canadian band.
Yeah.
Dude, it's like you said, the one at the end of that one Rush documentary, the guy's dad looked over and said, man, for three guys, they can make a lot of noise. No, yeah, another, just a trio band, but
yeah,
Triumph.
Power
just
trio.
Just a great song, a great man, and great songwriters.
What, talk about the Scorpions a bit. Do you think they're underrated in the overall pantheon?
Dude, no, because if you talk about anybody that's still going, I mean, like Nita Strauss, who's, mm-hmm. I guess she's now
talked to her yesterday,
Cooper's
yeah.
Guitars. She was on my show. I mean, like, you know, everybody. I mean, it's like, who was the blonde-headed lead singer from years ago that everybody thought was really hot?
From a band?
Yeah. God dang, she was a lead singer. Anyway, my point
Lita
is...
Lita Ford?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Lita Ford. She's a big Scorpions fan. And, like, it was a Scorpions documentary that I was watching, but, dude... Anybody that was anybody in the music scene,
mm-hmm.
I mean, with them dudes running along the stage like they was putting on the show and, that they did, and Klaus with that damn the voice that he had, and this was it would be post what was the first Schenker guy that was a guitarist?
Michael.
Yeah, this was with
Matthias Jabs,
yeah, yeah. And Rudolph,
yeah.
So, yeah, man, the Scorpions were at the very top of my list.
You know, it's funny because I just saw them recently, and they got Mickey D from Motorhead now on drums, and it's like a brand new band. I mean, they're always been good, but now they have a great drummer. And you see, like, Rudolph, he's like 68, but he's still ripped up. And, you know, those guys always, like, looked cool, even though, and we'll get into this in a second, they all had pretty bad hair. Like, you know, Klaus had a hat on.
Yeah.
Matthias has a hat on. But it didn't matter with the Scorps because they were so over-the-top German, and they just looked and sounded and acted like they were having the best time ever.
Man, I dug them, and they did try to, you know, start kind of kayfabing, you know, the hair going south. But, dude, I was also a huge fan. What was that, Balls to the Wall, the other band? Except, yeah. That's my memory. Man, Except was another big band for me. And different. I thought, man, these guys are really good. They should have an equal run as the Scorpions, but not even close.
Yeah, the singer wasn't as good, and they weren't as accessible. And like I said, too, weren't as cool. Like in the 80s, we talked earlier about Y&T, about how they were a great rock and roll band, but they didn't have the look, and they lost kind of some of their rawness when they came into the 80s. And a lot of bands fell into that trap.
Oh, dude, I'm glad you said that because it reminds me of one of the bands that you came, the songs that you came out to, Firehouse. They won what, Album of the Year, Band of the Year, right when grunge was kind of taking over, and then they were gone. Dude, those guys, I mean, if you like that kind of music, bluesy with a beat and a hook, those dudes were badass. That guy could sing his ass
off. Oh, yeah, the first Firehouse record is classic. Yeah. Every song is good. But there
Shake and Tumble, brother. I used to play that for half my before half my podcast. I play Shake and Tumble. And to some people, that might be hokey as shit.
It's a great tune.
That's a damn good hooky tune.
Oh, yeah, and there was a bad time around that time. I do this thing on my show called Classic Album Clash. Well, I'll compare, like I did Master of Puppets versus Ride the Lightning. And I just did Nevermind versus In Utero. Nirvana with Big Cass and Cena's trainer down in Tampa. And I got back into the Nirvana vibe. And I remember I hated them when it first came out because it was killing my music. You know, and you're a rock guy. How did you feel when grunge kind of started becoming more
popular? I dug some of the grunge because I was really into Alice. Soundgarden had a couple songs. You know, this one, Cornell. They were pretty epic. Pearl Jam, that first album, 10, whatever it was, that was awesome. But then the Nirvana, they had a couple of, and they kind of blew up more than all of them.
Oh, they were the biggest one, yeah.
Yeah, before Kurt, you know, offed himself, you know, wish he was still here. Mm-hmm. And Elaine Staley OD'd, Jesus Christ, Mark Starr, or what's his name? Mike Starr, the bassist.
Starr, yeah.
Yeah.
And Weiland now from Stone Temple Pilots.
Exactly.
And then Cornell, Andrew Wood from Mother Love Bone, all those guys passed away.
But I dug those bands, but all of a sudden it's like, dude, music as we know it, from that point on, it was gone. Mm-hmm. It's like today, man, I still like, this was a couple of years ago when Nickelback was still hot. And well, it might be more than a couple, it might be 7 years ago. And a lot of people just hate on Nickelback so bad. And I'm like, dude, I mean, for straight down the middle, just rock and roll, they're hitting it about as well as anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people really hate those guys, but man, I was a big Nickelback fan.
Well, the same thing happened with Creed. When Creed was really popular, suddenly everyone turned their back on him. I never understood that. Like,
did Scott Stapp get heat or what?
Oh, huge heat. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But still, you sold 40 million records and no one will admit to having one.
I know.
I don't understand how that works.
Yeah, you know? but going back to, you know, Nickelback was kind of straight down. I'm like, man, where's all the bands like this? And these days when I see the, dude, I'm old school. You know, I'm an older guy. When I see the awards and I'm seeing the rock and roll bands, I'm just not seeing, you know, what I grew up with. And I guess I identify so strongly with that. I try to live in the present. It's 2018. I know that. But my musical preference, other than, you know, Five Finger really got me hooked.
Yeah, yeah.
There's one or two other bands out there, but I just can't find anything new that I'm really into.
So who's some of your go-to then, like you mentioned, and you said Rage Against the Machine, but is there other bands, like you mentioned Motley Crue? Do you still listen to a lot of that stuff?
No, man. I used to like the Bullet Boys. I thought the Bullet Boys could have a bigger run than they had.
Right on.
And
their first album is really good.
Yeah.
Smooth Hard as a Rock.
Hard as a Rock.
Yeah,
yeah, man. So I'll put on Bullet Boys Radio. I'll put on Rush Radio. But there's not a. Oh, man. I got a copy in my pickup truck. It's Pantera doing a copy of Stranglehold, Nugent song.
Oh, I've never heard that.
Jesus Christ. It's one song on a CD. So it's Pantera doing Stranglehold. And boy, Dime hits that son of a bitch. Yeah. And they launch into it. And it feels on fire. And I'll send it to you just so you can
hear. Yeah, I've never heard it.
But that is still in my truck. And I got a little system in my truck. And I will thump that son of a bitch. And I'm the kind of guy, when I like a song, I will play it over and over and over again. And it drives my wife crazy.
Have you ever met Vinny at all? Vinny Paul from Pantera?
No, I never met those guys.
Seemed like a Texas guy. They've come to a couple of our shows and stuff. Yeah. How about the Ted Nugent? You have a great Ted Nugent story.
Oh, man.
I don't even know why I remember that. Just when you said Nugent, I'm like, wait, you have a Nugent story.
Yeah, man, we was hunting in South Texas, and he was going to be in Kerrville. And so say, hey, man, you want to go over and meet Ted? And I said, yeah, man, it'd be cool. So I loaded up my pickup truck, went over there, and sitting around the fire drinking. You know, Ted don't drink, allegedly. And
was he just hanging out hunting?
He just hangs out and hunts. He's a big hunter, you know. And he sang a couple songs. And then he teased that he was going to sing one of his big hits, and he put his guitar up, and I was like, man, He was just railing on everybody. And I was like, God dang, man. I said, can't we just hang out and just shoot the breeze a little bit? Is it all got by? Now that you're done talking about you, I'll talk about you.
I remember you said he was just playing like Kumbaya and stuff, and you were asking, can you play Stranglehold?
Yeah, I mean, the legend of Fred Bear only goes so long, brother. We're not all into the bow and arrow scene. Here's one. I wanted to run this one by you because I was a huge Michael Jackson fan.
Oh, yeah.
This was before I graduated high school, so it had to have been either 81 or 82. It could have been as early as 80. I don't remember. You can look it up on a computer. When Off the Wall came out, to me, that was Michael Jackson's breakout album. You know, it's been the Jacksons. They've been around forever. But, man, my buddy that I got one of my dogs from, we were getting his Malibu Classic. We'd ride around the main streets of Edna, two-door Malibu. And, man, we'd be playing that Off the Wall. And that's when I knew Michael Jackson. I didn't know he'd go on to be, you know, as big as he
was. Ended up, yeah.
But to me, that was the best album that he ever did.
You know, it's interesting because it's the famous story you might have heard is that when Off the Wall came out, it was snubbed by the Grammys. They didn't give him any awards. And he got so mad, he said, okay, I'm going to make the best album of all time. And he sent out kind of a message to all the big songwriters, send me your best stuff. And he got all these cool songs, but he still wanted a couple more. So he wrote Billie Jean and Beat It. Even with all the best songwriters in the world sending in their best album, the best material, he still wrote the two best songs himself. And then when that album came out, of course, it became what it was. But he did that out of spite towards the Grammy nomination committee because they didn't give him any awards for that.
Man, that's interesting to see how driven that guy was back in the day. But, man, when I look at the music business, now Stevie Ray Vaughan is one of my favorite musicians of all time and probably my favorite guitar player. Blues, anything. I just love Stevie Ray Vaughan. But as far as rock and roll or music stars, Elvis Presley and Michael Jackson, and I got to give Prince respect because I love Prince, and he was super talented, as you know, he could do anything and everything. But, man, Elvis and Michael Jackson, I don't know if there were two ever bigger stars in music than that, but you've been around more than me in the music scene.
No, there's not. I mean, it's Michael, it's Elvis, it's the Beatles. But the Beatles, the Beatles were a gang.
Yeah.
Elvis and Michael Jackson were on their own. You know, can you imagine? That's why when people bag on those guys, Elvis died on the toilet, or Michael Jackson was trying to make himself white. Can you imagine being in that position, the most famous person in the entire world? Everybody knows you. How do you even walk around? How can you even? I remember I was with what's his name? He was the big tall giant from WCW. Giant Gonzalez was his name in WWE. He was so tall he couldn't even walk in Japan without people. Like everywhere he went, people staring. People want to talk to him. I'm sure Big Show goes through it. Now imagine if you're that times a million, the most famous person on the planet. How could you survive? How could you do anything?
Here's a funny thing. Every now and then people say, "Look at me." And I say, man, don't you ever get tired of that?
Yeah.
Signed a couple autographs here and there. Let me tell you something, mister. When Michael Jackson stepped out of a car, there was probably 1,000 or 1,500 light bulbs there in the form of cameras. I mean, every single time that guy did anything. So that, I mean, and Elvis, but I mean, in more modern times, Michael Jackson, and to watch that guy perform on stage, just that slight build of his, dude, nobody's ever been a better performer on stage than that guy. Well, I mean, don't get me wrong, Prince was badass, but in a different way. I just thought Michael Jackson was awesome. And when you bring up the Beatles, it's funny because Yeah, I miss the Beatles. You know, I didn't really get them. I was kind of past that stage. I mean, well, I would pass it. I just wasn't into
didn't
it.
Didn't get it, yeah.
But these days, now I'm like, and when you hear about what a great bass guitarist, you know, everybody says Paul McCartney is. I'm like, okay, now I get it. Or the lyrics of Lennon or McCartney or this, that, or whatever. And when you've got musician after musician after musician, it's almost like being under the Bill Belichick coaching tree. It's like, you know, almost everybody in music today got somebody. Every single person got at least something from the Beatles.
Absolutely. When I first got into heavy metal is because I was a big Beatles fan in elementary school. And when I went to junior high school, all the girls that I liked were wearing Ozzy shirts and Judas Priest shirts. I mean, it wasn't cool to like the Beatles then. So I thought, if I'm ever going to get a date, I got to try some of this out. So I went and bought Ozzy Blizzard of Oz. And I listened to it. It starts with, I don't know, goes into Crazy Trip. But the third song is called Goodbye to Romance.
Yep.
It's a Beatles song. And that's when I got it. Like, it's not a cover, but it's very Beatles influenced.
Right.
I was like, this guy loves the Beatles. I can see it from a mile away. And people wouldn't believe me. Like, oh yeah, bullshit, Ozzy wouldn't like the Beatles. It's a Beatles song. Yeah. And that's when I started realizing Beatles are influencing everybody at this point in time, you know?
I even saw an interview, I think, when Lemmy went over to Beatles, and then Lemmy's like the god of metal, right?
Yeah.
Or speed metal, whatever you want to call it. I mean, like when you know, Lemmy puts over anything.
He loved Chuck Berry.
Yeah.
You know, he always
said
that Motorhead's a rock and roll band. And that's what they were. They were an amped up rock and roll band, not a heavy metal band. It was just a fast, heavy blues band, like you said.
Yeah.
You know? What was the first album that you ever bought?
I can't remember the vinyl, but I can remember getting my, man, it might have been, I don't know if I even bought too many albums, but my first 8-track tape that I bought, because I bought it, I'll never forget, I bought it, it was JCPenney or Sears, because I had one of those escalators. And dude, as Stone Cold Steve Austin, I was the toughest sumbitch in the history of that company. I'd stomp a mud hole in you, walk it dry, but back in the day, I was deathly afraid of getting on an escalator. We'd be going down. My mom would be going down. I'd be like doing that back pedal thing like I'm trying to time it. You know, like you're on a playground and you're trying to time a jump rope? I'm like, and then you got to grab the two rubber gimmicks? That's how it scared the shit out of me. So anyway, I remember we went on a Sunday, and back in the day, you used to have a blue law. Well, you couldn't buy that kind of stuff on a Sunday because it was a religious day.
Really?
Absolutely, in Texas.
You couldn't buy records? Or
yeah, certain things you just couldn't buy. It was the weirdest thing in the world. Straight up shoot. Anyway, but I remember taking my hard-earned money, and the first 8-track I bought was Earth, Wind, and Fire, and it was the album. I don't remember what it's called, but it had Serpentine Fire on it.
Okay.
For some reason, dude, I just love Serpentine Fire.
how ridiculous was an 8-track?
Oh, when you think now, yeah, flat out, especially when it changed tracks in the middle of a song and it faded out and it clicked over and it faded back in. But back in, you know, you didn't know any better.
Yeah.
These days, if you had to go that system, you say, this is the drizzling shits.
I remember a couple of years ago, Cheap Trick put on an album. They put it on an 8-track because they said no matter how many we sell, we're going to have the highest selling 8-track of the year. I was like, how could you even play it? It's like, that's not the point. You just get it. Because I was the same. My dad had a bunch of 8-tracks, and the first one I can remember was there was a Beach Boys album called Summer Fun. It was the greatest hits album on 8-track, and he also had Beatles' Let It Be. And that's what I listened to. Like you said, it was Program 1, Program 2, Program 3, Program 4, fading in and out, all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Man, what was that band? Oh, Beach Boys. Mm-hmm. God dang, dude. I used to have this little gimmick. You know those little gimmick 8-track players you could, you know.
Like a boombox?
Yeah, like a boombox.
We called them ghetto blasters.
Dude, yeah, man, the Beach Boys, I was on.
Mm-hmm.
The Beach Boys were awesome.
Great harmonies, great tunes. You could put together like 30 great Beach Boys songs and you would know them.
I know, but the thing about it is when you listen to the Beach Boys too much, I mean, fun till your daddy took it. I mean, something you listen to that shit too much, yeah, like you want to punch yourself in the mouth. But in a proper dose, it was good.
Yeah, you're not always having fun,
yeah.
Okay? It's not always fun. Are you looking up some tunes there?
I'm looking up some tunes just because as I was working out today, I knew you wanted to talk a little bit about music, and this is on Boston Radio. I don't know if you remember Couldn't Get It Right by the Climax Blues Band.
Wow, Couldn't Get It Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
that was a good tune. And, here's one. I don't know if you remember a band called Firefall. You Are the Woman.
Oh.
You are the woman that I've always dreamed of.
Okay, so here's
the thing. I knew it from a start.
So Rich Ward, who you know,
yeah,
Rich,
yeah.
From Fozzy, he loved, that's his favorite type of music, is
yeah.
All of that sort of stuff, the yacht rock from the 70s. So he will listen to that nonstop and sing it nonstop, then go on stage and lay down some heavy ass, amazing rock and roll riffs.
Isn't it interesting how that works?
Yeah.
Here's another one. Do you remember a guy named Paul Davis?
What did he sing?
Cool Night.
Oh, it's gonna be a cool night.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And then I, yeah, then I was in Long Beach talking to C.T. Fletcher. But that's just you know some of the things to do. And like every now and then, I'll just hit my picture button on my iPhone and go like, I'm gonna download that album.
Mm-hmm.
So. And you do it. Just some of that old shit.
Well, and it's because, like I said, a good song is a good song no matter how soft rock, hard rock. It's a good melody that you remember.
I need to find out. Do you ever listen to the radio?
Well, because Judas, our song was on the radio, I would listen to it on Octane. But it's not something I put on all the time because I find a lot of it's very similar to the others.
Man, if I want to buy it, like I just Luke Bryan was on my show a couple of weeks ago, so I downloaded.
How
a couple
was he?
Of his album. Oh, he's awesome.
He's great.
Well, the thing about it was, I told him, Stacy set up for me.
Mm.
I said, she said he's got an hour. He's promoting his new album. I said, yeah, I know he's got a new album. I said, I dig it. And
Did he come to Gimmick Street?
No. I had to go over there. Yeah. And I said, but I ain't driving across town to ask him no Wikipedia questions. I just want to talk hunting and football, and we'll promote the album. Mm-hmm. She said, fine. You know, he's cool with that. So, dude, literally when the podcast started rolling, he saw a picture. Chris and I both have the same kind of dogs, a black lab and a silver lab.
Yeah.
Well, he's in the labs because he's a big hunter. So he saw a picture of my dog on the phone, and we start talking. We're rolling sound. We're talking about dogs. And then we're talking about, God dang, it's a hell of a time to release an album. It's deer season. Have you had a chance to get in the stand yet? So it was cool because we got a chance to talk about one of his passions,
mm-hmm.
and cover the music and promote the album, but not sit there and go through the cookie cutter questions.
No, it gives him a chance to talk about something that he likes that he doesn't get a chance to really talk about.
Well, I mean, same here with you and me, just sitting here talking about this shit.
That's why the podcast that you and I do works. I never have questions. I never pull out a list of anything. It's just a conversation, man. Like I said, I had the idea, let's talk about music. Okay, where's it going to go? Well, it's been going pretty good so far because you just go with two guys shooting the breeze about music.
Yeah.
You know? How was it for you? Like, so in the Attitude Era, and even there's always bands playing on Raw backstage. Oh, yeah. I know, did you ever get a chance to meet anybody cool?
Yeah, man, when Crew played.
Oh, yeah.
When Motley Crue played, man, I went over there and they were pretty down. You know, I think they knew who I was and... Well, I just remember there was a rough smell in there. It was just like talking to Zach Wild when I roasted him. You know, he's like, never took a shower. He's in a $2 million tour bus, but he just won't take a shower because he's a Viking.
Right.
You know, so I was hanging out with the crew, and I was like, man, somebody had some funky armpits, right? But, I talked to him for a little bit. But you know how it is, dude. When you're dialed in, you're in the zone, you got a show. Mm-hmm. You hang out, talk a little bit, and then you got to go. But it was cool seeing the crew there. The one time, man, I think you'll remember this pay-per-view. Triple H was wrestling, probably main event or semi-main, whatever it was, and Motorhead was there. And I think Lemmy said words to the effect that we're Motorhead. We're here to kick your ass. But the way he said it, the way they had that sound booming through that arena, the way that it captured it on that pay-per-view, I was like, holy shit. And, dude, they struck it up, and just every hair on my fucking arm went up.
Yeah.
And when I watch it back to this day, that entrance by Triple H with Motorhead playing his song right there, live and in living color, one of the best entrances I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And this is probably going back 10 years ago.
You know, there's a picture, and I think you're in it. Bubba just sent it to me, Bubba Dudley, from that day. They might have played it twice. I know they played it one time at the Staples, and they're all there. And it's all the boys hanging out with Lemmy and Phil and Mickey. I think you're in it. Tommy Dreamer's in it, Bubba, myself. And it's just like, I forgot about that day. You mentioned it now, and I just thought about that picture. I'll see if I can find it and send it to you. Because they were around quite a bit for a time being.
With Lemmy. Yeah, man. It was cool, man. When Motorhead and them around, it's like, I remember talking to Triple H one time, and God rest his soul, Lemmy's no longer with us.
Yeah.
And he kind of just poked me. He goes, yeah. He goes, they won't let him donate blood because he'll melt the bag or whatever. But golly, what a cool guy and what a rock icon. And
once again, not what you would expect. Very smart, very polite, very respectful.
Yeah. He really highly intelligent.
Yeah. And very angry at Triple H whenever they played, Triple H lost. And that bothered Lemmy.
He's like, did you lost, the shoot?
You lost again? Or just didn't understand why the script had to go that way, right. You know? What was the deal when you did, just as we wind down here, I know that you had a, I remember this, you did like a Stone Cold Steve Austin heavy metal compilation record or something.
Hey man, I had this dude contact me out of the blue. He figured, you know, hey, why don't you you pick some songs, we'll you know, go get all the rights and stuff, and we'll release the Stone Cold Metal.
Mm-hmm.
I said, hey man, sounds like a good idea to me. So, I mean, if you look up that album, I can't remember all the songs on there.
What were some of the ones that you chose?
Well, Stone Cold was on there from Rainbow. you know, there was an Accept song on there. Scorpions, probably two Scorpion songs on there. I can't remember right now. I think Stranglehold is on there. Can you look it up?
I'll look it up right now.
But okay, but while I'm telling that story, you know, I wrote a couple of liner notes, what each song meant to me. Oh, mm-hmm. Dokken, probably two Dokken songs on there. I was a huge Dokken fan going on back in the day. And then that one did so well, Chris. That album sold damn near 500,000 copies.
Really?
Yeah. What's that? Almost gold?
Yeah, 1998. Yeah, almost. Yeah. No, that is gold. 500,000
okay.
is gold.
Okay, but it was like in the high 300 range. So by now, it maybe would have hit 400. So whatever. So all of a sudden, man, dude, I made some money off that. And then the guy says, well, why don't we do a Stone Cold Country album?
Right.
And so we did Stone Cold Country, and I picked those songs off the... I handpicked both albums. I didn't write liner notes for Stone Cold Country because I was strung out from being on the road. But yeah, you know, I was able to get everybody on board. They made money, and I made money.
That shows how huge you were in the WWE was at that time, that you can get all of those, you know, rights fees and stuff. Because this was August 25th, 1998, by Mars Records.
Yes.
It was the first wrestling CD, quote unquote, to ever chart in the Billboard 200. So here's the
I can't wait because I don't remember all the songs.
All right. Rock You Like a Hurricane.
Oh, dude. I mean, that's the thing. You know, that's the business. Here we are. Rock You Like a Hurricane. Dude, yeah. We're going to roll in your town. We're going to put on a show inside a squared circle and get down the road. That's why I identified with that song. Plus, it's just got a good-ass, badass beat.
A great opening track. And then it goes to God of Thunder.
Oh, dude. Kiss. God of Thunder. Holy smokes. I mean, Detroit Rock City, God of Thunder. You know, come on.
Yeah, even to this day, Gene still does that. And when he plays it, I remember I saw him in Vegas a couple years ago, and I was looking at him, it's like he is the God of Thunder when he sings that song and he spits the blood. Now he flies up to the rigging up top with the little, you know, the little cable there, but he just looks like the God.
Yeah, you know? And dude, back in the day, you know, I was such a fan. I'll never forget when The Exorcist came out on HBO or whatever it was, and they played a Kiss concert right after that. It's like totally freaky.
It fixed, yeah.
And it's like Gene was really spitting the blood out. He had the tongue going. I was like just totally wigged out. It was amazing. What a showman they all four were.
Yeah, absolutely. To this day, then Balls to the Wall.
Oh, except
right, good tune.
Just a bad song.
Then Perfect Strangers.
Oh, dude, I mean. Just the way that song starts out.
Yeah, well, you know? that was Shane Douglas's theme song at ECW.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Breaking the Chains.
Dude, I was a huge Dokken fan. Loved George Lynch's guitar player. You know, Don, you know, he pretty good singer. Mm-hmm. Heard he was kind of cantankerous. But for a while, you know, and not everybody got Dokken. They weren't an arena band, I don't think, or a band that you just go to see.
They were opening arenas, yeah.
But I like their sound.
Their album Tooth and Nail was always my favorite.
Yeah.
I saw them open for Kiss on the Animalize tour back in 84. Here's the one I kind of a little bit of a left field one. Dreams I'll Never See.
Oh, dude, Molly Hatchet, man. God, listen to the guitars on that. Listen to the way it's like, tan, 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 tan. Oh, man, Molly Hatchet. And was it Dave Lubeck?
Yeah.
The lead singer, I think he had a kidney problem.
Mm.
He died at a young age.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I love Skinner guitars. I also love Molly Hatchet guitars.
Mm.
And just when you listen to that song, Ramble, it's about a six-minute song. But Dreams I'll Never See, love that song.
It's amazing how many huge names agreed to do this. That's very cool. Then one we've talked about quite a bit, Stranglehold.
Yeah, dude, I just love that song.
I wish you would have played it for you at the campfire.
Oh, dude. What else is on there?
Detroit Rock City.
Oh, yeah.
Classic. Then here's a good one, Rainbow in the Dark.
Yeah, dude, Dio. Everybody loved Dio.
Mm-hmm.
And when he left us a couple years back, that was a sad day. So, and going back, when you mentioned Dio in the same vein, I think of Rat, cut in at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was a big Rat fan back
right,
in the
same
day.
Time. Yeah. Have you heard about this thing now they're doing the hologram?
No.
Okay, so they have it's touring right now. It's Dio's band playing with a Ronnie James Dio hologram from a live performance. So they play live, and Dio's obviously his hologram. So it's like seeing the ghost of Dio live.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's going to be kind of something interesting to see, because if it works, they'll do Michael Jackson, they'll do Elvis, you know.
Hey, dude, I don't know what kind of arena sell out, but it'll sell some tickets somewhere.
I think so. I think 2,500, 5,000 seat venue, if they can fit it in there. No One Like You.
Oh, man. Another Scorpions. Another classic. This song just hits hard. And
great opening guitar solo on that. Slow Ride.
Oh, Slow Ride, Fall Gat. Yeah. You listen, you look at the lyrics, but it's just one of those songs. It's almost like Low Rider. It's just something about it. Slow Ride, down, take it down, easy. Down, you know, down, it's a groove song.
Did you know they're a British band?
I did not know that.
It's such an American sounding tune, but they're from England, a couple more here. On Through the Night. That's an interesting choice.
Again, that's another song about the business. Def Leppard. On Through the Night, man. Here we go, man. We just got finished rocking you like a hurricane.
Yeah.
Now we're driving to the next place.
That's kind of almost an obscure Def Leppard tune.
Yeah. But it was always one that resonated with me.
Yeah, yeah. Then there's Rain.
Going back to the Cult. Mm-hmm. In Asbury. Their guitar player, I forget his name.
Billy Duffy.
Yes. Great guitars.
Yeah, yeah. Great tunes.
Yeah.
They switched so much between Rain and She Sells Sanctuary to Electric, where they dropped the goth and went very AC/DC, which blew my mind, you know? I remember my friends going, have you heard the new Cult? Sounds like AC/DC. I'm like, that Cult sucks,
dude. It was 1986, 1987. I was playing football at North Texas State University. I was over at my buddy's apartment. We was drinking beer. We had a flank steak on the grill. We was working on the freight docks, and I think it was Rain or She Sells Sanctuary was on MTV, and it was the one where they're kind of dancing like this, and there was just it was a visual at first that drew me to that song, and then it was the audio that's like, man, that's a good fucking song. Mm-hmm. But it was the visual of seeing those guys, and this is back when they were wearing a little bit of makeup, and in Asbury with that long straight hair, and it was just something about it just captured me. That's why it's on that.
They
album.
Had a good little run, and then the last tune, "Stone Cold" by Rainbow.
Yeah, you know, it's just a cool song, and kind of it fit.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, don't really know me or what, however it goes, you're Stone Cold.
You thought you knew me so well.
Yeah.
With Joe Lynn Turner, who had a wig even back then.
Yeah.
Our bass player.
And so anyway, but that was the story about how that happened. A dude called me up. We come up with that. We did Stone Cold Country. The interesting note on Stone Cold Country, I wanted a Clint Black song on there, Killing Time or something like that. And he was the only guy that we ever contacted that says, you know what, I think I'm a little more contemporary than those guys, so I'd rather not be on that album. So Clint Black was the guy that turned me or us down. I respect him for it.
Yeah.
You know, so he didn't feel like he belonged in that category.
He was an elitist.
He was newer, an elitist. So props to him, but everybody else was always all in.
Last question, who's your favorite band of all time? If you had to choose
one. Well, that's so hard because I'll get in these, you know, like I said, that Firehouse. Are they my favorite band? No. But that Shake
and
Tumble.
That's a great call, man. That's a great album.
Yeah, it is a great album.
If you haven't heard it and you like kind of, it's even heavier than Motley Crue, almost a Judas Priest combined with Motley Crue, combined with Van Halen.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you brought out Judas Priest because those two guys playing guitar, you know, kind of that sound again with Rob Halford singing. Those guys were lights out, and I didn't get into them. I mean, I'm more into them now than I was when they were around.
Gotcha.
Because they were ahead of me, and I finally caught back up.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, those guys were awesome. But anyway, that's how that all came out.
No, but it was your favorite band.
Oh, favorite band, man. If I just got to go, you know, like I said, Michael Jackson, huge to me. Elvis on a cool factor, huge to me, but Michael Jackson's going to take that spot. But just as a band that still resonates with me to this day, out of all, and I haven't named even half of them because I can't remember all of them. Dude, hands down, I'm going to throw Boston at you.
Wow.
And like I said, live performing, with no disrespect to any of the members, they weren't Chili Red Hot. And I love the Red Hot Chili Peppers. But if I was going to say a band that I'm still into from a feeling, from nostalgia that holds up, stands the test of time, is good shit, the signature sound, Boston.
Here's one little bit of trivia for you before we go. Did you ever see the Boston album? Remember the back cover?
Yes.
The drummer had a big afro. His name was Sib.
Yeah.
Did you know that his daughter is the Rock's girlfriend, wife, baby daddy?
Yeah,
I had no idea.
No, I didn't find out until about a year or two ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, Sid Ashen is his
name. Yeah, Sid Ashen, who passed away on a cruise ship playing rock and roll.
Yeah.
Not a bad way to go if you're in a rock and roll band.
Yeah, man. I knew who that was. And but, yeah, all those guys. And Barry Goodrow, the guitarist. And a guy named Tom Scholz. What a genius that guy was. And he was out there, I think, an MIT guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to try to wrap up this podcast. It's your podcast. But I'm from Boston. Okay, let me ask you. Can I turn it around?
Yeah.
You got to give me one band.
Favorite band of all time? I always go with the Beatles because I was a Beatles fan when I was 10. I'm a Beatles fan now. I've always understood the genius. And as I get older, I understand just how incredible it was. They could do so much in such a short period of time. 7 years was their career. Think of all, not just musically, but socially, things they changed. Look, you know, they're talking about Eastern meditation and drugs and all this sort of stuff. Iron Maiden, Metallica, Kiss, those are that's the musical diet. Those are my four musical
I would go with you on those last ones. Beatles, like I said, I didn't get into them until now. Now I understand their influence, and I understand a lot of their music and appreciate a lot of their songs. So you're.
I got to throw AC/DC in there too. Sorry.
Oh, dude. Absolutely. AC/DC from a standpoint of, like you said, just meat and potatoes, badass shit, and simplicity. And a lot of people say, hey, man, Angus is playing the same old shit all the time. Or it's like hearing Ric Flair is wrestling the same old match all the time. And now, motherfucker, you don't get it. Or if you think you get it, you're overthinking it.
As I get older, once again, I've realized that AC/DC is the best rock and roll band of all time. As far as being a machine, five guys playing together, it's not what you do, it's what you don't do, which is what Pat Patterson taught you and I in the wrestling ring as well. It's the space in between, the groove, the vibe. It's AC/DC all the way for me, man.
I'm done. I'm roasted.
All right, man. Thanks, dude. Check out Steve Austin's podcast at Apple Podcasts or Podcast One. He's one of the pioneers. The Family Friendly Show on Tuesday and the Unleashed Show every Thursday. Thanks to Steve. He's such a great guest and so many good stories about his rock and roll history. Lots of rock and roll history coming up on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. Setting sail October 27th. Still a few cabins available at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. We are selling it. We've had a real resurgence over the last few weeks. It's great to see as we get closer to that sellout number. And remember, once you book your cabin, everything is included in the price. All the live podcasts, concerts, comedy shows, meet and greets, autograph signings, wrestling matches, pictures with the guys, food as well. The only things you pay for aboard the ship are alcohol and gambling, but all the activities are free, all inclusive with your cabin reservation. Go on ChrisJerichoCruise.com to find the entire lineup, including Kenny Omega and the Bullet Club, including the huge matches that were announced. First round of the Sea of Honor tournament has been announced from Ring of Honor, and we've got Jay Lethal versus BJ Whitmer, Christopher Daniels versus Delirious, Marty Scurll versus Rhett Titus, Silas Young versus Flip Gordon, Mark Briscoe versus Will Ferrara, Adam Page versus Frankie Kazarian, Chi Battle Guy versus the Beer City Bruiser, Jay Briscoe versus Kenny King, and that's just the beginning. Way more matches to be announced over the upcoming days, weeks. I am going to Atlanta today for a huge meeting with Six Man, who is my partner on this cruise, to get everything rocking. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com to see all the talent that's going to be on board. It's going to be very, very amazing. Make history. Make sure to sign up now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com and be a part of the very first Rock and Wrestling Rager ever. The first of many, I'm hoping. I guarantee it. So go check that out at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And check out Friday here on Talk is Jericho. Glow premieres on Netflix Season 2 Friday. And to celebrate it, we got two of the gorgeous ladies of wrestling on Talk is Jericho. Jackie Tone, who plays Melrose, and the newest cast member, Shakira Barrera, who plays Yo-Yo. They're talking about the new season, the wrestling skills, working with Chavo Guerrero, training for wrestling, all of the success that Glow has accrued, and so much more. That's coming up on Friday. Glow is back on Netflix. You can binge watch Glow and then come and binge watch Talk is Jericho, or binge listen, baby, and hear all about the new season of Glow exclusively here on Talk is Jericho on Friday. So we'll see you then, but in the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. And that's the bottom line, because Stone Chris said so.